Talking landscape photography with Kristen Fletcher and Carwin.
When you think about some of the legends of Australian landscape photography, if you're anything like me, you automatically think of Dr. Les Walkling, Tony Hewitt, Christian Fletcher, and of course, Peter Lick. But sadly, he couldn't be with us today, so we've got Peter Eastway.
Just listening to Christian's phone ring in the background.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What is that, the Samsung S20, Fletch?
The Galaxy S20 Ultra, and I paid for it with my own hard cash. Actually, yeah. I didn't pay, but I put it on a plan.
That is a massive phone.
But I'm just waiting. I'm hoping that someone from Samsung will actually one day listen to one of our podcasts and go, oh, that guy's always banging on about our beautiful phone.
That's such a big phone.
So that's a Samsung. But last time you were talking, you had, what was that? It was a Huawei or something.
Huawei, yeah.
What happened to that one, Christian?
Well, you know, I changed my phones like I changed my underwear, you know.
Well,
I've only got two pairs, aren't
we? We had that Huawei for a while. That's...
I mean, it was just that when I used to listen to you talk about that new phone, it was just so amazing. And now you're telling me about this other new phone, which is just so amazing. I'm just wondering what you're going to tell me next week. That was all.
Well, see, Pete, you're still in an induced sort of COVID state. And that's why we wanted to get you on before you really... The disease took hold and really got into your neural synapses because we don't want to lose you because, you know, this last two
for the
weeks...
viewers at home, you should look at Carwin's face here where it's just this look of disbelief and, oh, God, here we go
If
only you could see the way he is looking because, Carwin... I get it. And you want to know, can I just say something before Christian continues? I am now into day 22 of isolation, and I've got this new appreciation for how good it has been without listening to Christian for the last 22 days. It's been wonderful. Sorry, Christian, you were going on.
Thanks for the compliment. Actually, Pete, just so you know, Christian and I actually recorded a podcast a couple of weeks ago, just in case, and he pretty much started doing a eulogy for you. He's like, Peter Eastway, what he did for Australian photography.
It was beautiful, man.
What's the famous line? Reports of my death are greatly exaggerated.
Well, look, mate, the industry was in turmoil, and it's not just because we're not making any money because no one wants to buy photography anymore because there's no point. You'd rather buy, veggies and beer because, why would you waste money on photos when you can, you've got to live. You've just got to fight your way to...
Waste money on beer, is that what you mean?
What? Oh, you don't drink beer, do you? You drink cider. Pizza cider, apple cider kind of drinker, which is, it's very admirable.
It's trendy, but look, isn't it?
The heartfelt cries that went out when everyone realised that you were stuck in a boat filled with filthy COVID-riddled passengers, it was unbelievable, wasn't it, Carwin?
It's quite amazing, and there's been a movement in your absence, Peter, the whole Sir Peter Eastway movement in society out there, and mate, there's been people genuinely worried, and what do you have to say about that, the whole Sir Peter Eastway thing?
Sorry, what was the question again?
See, modest is so modest.
He's so modest.
Yeah. So, Pete, mate... Yep. It's good to have you on. Jokes aside, we were worried about you. We all felt a little bit sympathetic because you have been stuck in the bowels of a ship. I have to be careful how I say that. Bowels of a ship for 16 days, I believe, before you managed to get off and get to relative safety of Melbourne.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about that, mate. Because
When you're in isolation, Christian, it's there's not a lot to tell because you're isolated, and so nothing much happens. You're just isolated.
I can see that it has had an effect on you because your answers are very
isolating.
Very, yeah, they are. Look, we've had some conversations since.
I've heard them. I listened to the podcast from down in the Antarctic and off the Uruguayan coast. Mind you, I didn't have anything else to do, so that was probably something to keep me occupied. I had difficulties reloading one of them, and I wondered whether that was because you'd said some bad things about Phase 1 cameras since your defection to Leica, and whether that was no longer available because of the court case they're taking against you. Is that true?
The last mention I made of Phase 1, I was very complimentary about their product. And look, Phase 1 put me on the map, and I have to let the listeners know that you, Peter, were the reason I bought a Phase 1 camera, but you weren't the reason I left. It was Nick Rains actually was the reason I left Phase 1, so we can blame him.
No, Nick's a nice guy. I would never blame him for anything.
Look, enough about us, Peter. I know we are important, and this is our podcast, but so this is about you. It's about you today, mate. We want to know how you got into this mess.
Well, It's interesting how I got into the mess. I was in America and Japan earlier in the year, and in January and February. And when we left Japan, we were aware of the COVID virus being in China, and there are quite a few Chinese people skiing in Japan these days. And we were back in plenty of time, and didn't seem to be a big deal. Then Tony and I were in the States for a couple of weeks, and nothing much was happening over there. But as Donald Trump is telling us all at the moment, that was because there wasn't anything to do. But that's a side story, which is unfolding. And then I got back, and I was only back for 4 or 5 days. And then I jumped on a plane, and we flew into Antarctica via Punta. And so we didn't have any problems like you did, but on one of your voyages, we got straight into drama. So on the 3rd of March or 4th of March, we spent a couple of weeks down in Antarctica and ended up in Ushuaia on the 14th of March. And when we arrived into Ushuaia, we were aware that people were looking at closing borders. A pandemic had been declared, I think, a day before, but while it was called a pandemic, it wasn't clear what was going to happen. And so we're sitting around on the ship, and we're 120 odd passengers about to turn up, and do you go or do you stay? And one or two of the crew decided they possibly shouldn't go, because if they got the coronavirus, because of other health issues, they could be susceptible. But most of us looked at it and said, it's just a virus like the flu. We should be okay. And by the time we get back, we're gone for 18, 20 days, this will all be over. And we figured that going down to Antarctica was actually quite a safe thing to do, because, this thing was just going to blow over in a couple of weeks. They'd close it down, make sure everything's okay. And then by the time we got back, things would be right as rain. That was what we thought. It didn't quite work out that way, obviously. But that was why we went down. And so it was very safe. Amazing trip. I've come back from Antarctica, and I reckon I've got the best work I've ever taken down there after these last two voyages. You can go to petereastway.com and check out Antarctica 2020. There's a portfolio of photos there. And what you should do is buy a couple too. Hell, I'm going to need the money now to pay for this telephone call over to Western Australia.
Now, look,
I'm just having...
Sorry, Fletcher. Look, this is all, it's all a little bit shrouded in mystery. Fletch was actually doing your eulogy just a couple of weeks ago, and we decided not to play that podcast. Mate, we just want to know, did you actually get the coronavirus?
Yeah, around about 70% of the ship tested positive for the coronavirus.
Wow.
So that's really interesting, because...
So you got it?
Before we went on the ship, everybody was taken temperature tests, etc. Everyone had to make declarations about their health, declarations about where they had been. If you had been in Japan 30 days or less, you wouldn't have been able to get on the ship, which would have been interesting for me, because I had already been on the ship for 2 weeks, but I was just outside the 30 days. So who took the virus on? Well, there are lots of conspiracy theories there, and nobody really knows.
It's probably Donald Trump.
For the first, yeah, I mean, but you know, we had 2 or 3 days to sail, yeah, to voyage down to Antarctica, and then we were there for 4 or 5 days, and then somebody tested with a fever, because you know, we were being tested regularly. We had 2 doctors on board. Everybody was aware of the situation. We're all practicing, you know, extra hygiene, all of that sort of stuff. But really, we were only worried about getting the normal ship flu. We were all pretty sure, based on the testing we'd done, that we had a clean ship. So when someone came down with a fever, we actually felt that it had been a really cold day. It was a kayaker who came down with it. And, you know, I looked at it. I thought, geez, if you're out there and it was freezing cold, I know that I've been out in cold conditions and I've come down with a fever because the body just reacts. And so we figured that she had a fever. It wasn't COVID or anything like that. So then this... a few other people started to get temperatures and a few more people came down. But even up until the point where we were anchored off Montevideo in Uruguay, when they came and did the tests, they tested 8 of us. Well, they had 8 tests, 8 quick rapid tests, and they were all negative. And so we're all saying, yeah, we haven't got the virus. We're clear. It's something else that we've got, but it's not COVID. Then they came on and they did proper, the long-term test, the more accurate test, one might say, I guess. And that was when they came back and they found out that 70% of us basically were testing positive.
Did you actually get it yourself, Pete?
Yes, I tested positive.
Yeah. And Carmen, I spoke to Pete on the weekend and I was shocked to hear of his terrible plight with COVID-19 and how he... how he was on oxygen for 3 days. Because I said to Pete, you know, how was it? It must have been terrible. I mean, he goes, well, I was on oxygen for 3 days. And he said, the worst thing about that is that there was only 1 oxygen bottle on the whole boat and we all had to line up. Go to the front of the line and you have a couple of puffs and then you go to the back of the line and he says, but then there was these Americans that just kept pushing in the way and just getting in and you know,
that'd be right.
And that was the worst thing about it. So, you know, and then at that point I thought, yeah, because he was quite convincing. I said, oh, Christian, yeah, I was on oxygen for 3 days and as he does. And I thought, no, Pete, he's so good at doing this. I know he's pulling my leg. And I said, no, bullshit. And I said, what actually happened? And he goes, oh, yeah, had a headache for a couple of hours. So that's right, Pete. Headache for a couple of hours.
Headache for a couple of hours, and that was it. And so most people are asymptomatic, I think, and didn't really know they had it. But this in no way should say that there's nothing happening about it. I mean, it is a very serious issue, and we did have 6 passengers who were taken off the ship in Montevideo and had hospital care. And one of them was very serious for quite a number of days and is on the mend now, as I speak now, as I understand it. So there's no doubt that what we did on ship, even though we didn't know, and even though a lot of us believe that it wasn't COVID, we did everything that we did as though it were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in many ways, I guess, thank heavens we did, because we obviously limited the spread. But having said that, I think the spread happened before we knew, because it takes a certain number of days. I'm sure that the spread happened in the first 5 or 6 days when we were all on shore, all on the ship, because we're all in the lecture theatre together or sitting down at the dinner table talking and you're mixing around and all that sort of stuff. You're at the bar having drinks. Beautiful ship, you know, so it's very, very conducive to being social and getting out and about. So that's when the virus got spread. Yeah. Someone brought it on and wasn't presenting.
And you were double dipping, weren't you?
I was double dipping?
Yeah. double dipping. You were getting your corn chips and double dipping.
It was you, Peter.
And that's,
Patient zero.
It has been a long time since we've talked, hasn't it?
Mate, can I just ask you, on Sunday, you were obviously on one of these repatriation flights that came in on Sunday. It was on news.com.au and, you know, few people were following the flights on flight radar and that sort of stuff. But news.com.au described your flight as a virus-riddled flight. Can you talk us... They actually did. Can you talk us through what it was actually like on the plane? Because... you know, I think people just have this thing in their mind that, you know, there's all these people in personal, you know, protective equipment and
sick and dying in the aisles.
Yeah, no. And look, it is quite interesting. What was it like, mate? I've heard anecdotal reports, and I don't know if this is true or not, but we understand that very high people in the Victorian government rang up the plane and tried to turn it around a couple of hours before we landed because they were paranoid about all of these COVID plus people landing. And another question came through saying, well, how many ambulances are you going to need to get us off the plane? And I guess there's just so much misinformation out there in that everybody except for maybe two people who got on the plane, it's just like I'm looking at you guys on Skype. You know, we're fit and healthy. There are a whole lot of people that were tested negative. There are a whole lot of people who are tested positive, but we're all healthy. And I think that the health department here in Victoria was really surprised when we all walked off the plane. I think they're expecting us all to be stretchered off and that they're going to have the worst number of COVID cases in the country because of what we brought back. And so it just wasn't like that. I mean, on board, having said that, they divided the plane into sections. They had plastic screens between different sections of the plane. We all had to wear a face mask for the entire time. The crew were completely covered in their white suits and goggles and face mask and all of that sort of stuff. But I mean, it was interesting. We got off the ship and we got put onto buses, and then the buses, we had a cavalcade with sirens and police bikes riding past and keeping the road open for us. The Uruguayan government and the people in Montevideo were just so warm and friendly. They, you know, they even had a couple had signs saying "Go Australia" and "Go safe trip home" and all that. It was really couldn't buy that sort of experience. It was really heartwarming to be rescued like that because, let's face it, we were a bunch of wealthy people that had gone down to Antarctica and we were stuck. And to be helped back like that, and for the government, the Uruguayan government to let us off after they were sure that it wouldn't impact their own citizens, which I get. They were just so friendly and helpful. It was really, really heartwarming. Then we come back into Australia, and the staff that we met at the border control and all that, really friendly. Everybody was happy and helped us out. We got on the bus. We came to the hotel. The hotel people here, really friendly, really helpful. I've been tested by a couple of staff. Really friendly, really helpful. And so on the ground, when you're dealing one-to-one with people, it's been a really fantastic experience. The only downside, I guess, is the way you do get reported by the press. Sorry, I've got some things happening there. There we go. Change the sound just came on. God, it's Donald Trump over there on my television set. But it was just really disappointing to see the way that, I guess, it's been reported in the press, because now I look at the press and I think, I can't believe anything they ever write because of the way they have just so mispresented our situation. And it's interesting too that the government authorities are basically listening to the media to base their assessments, because as we told the person in the health department, whoever it was who rang up wanting to turn the plane around, ring up the pilot on the plane and ask him if you don't believe us. And that's because they were putting the press beat ups ahead of, basically the people on the ground. So, you guys just be careful what you say out there as now honorary members of the media. You probably, you should go and fact check everything I've said before you publish this.
Pete, if it's coming from your mouth, mate, we all know it's the truth.
Yeah. That is
in a nutshell, we're very appreciative of being looked after. I do think though that now that I'm here in the hotel, I've got a first world problem in the food that they're providing. I reckon the Victorian government has given the hotel we're in such a slow rate that all they can really afford to give us is rice and water for our meals, because the food has not been great to date. And so we're going out for Uber Eats.
What about toilet paper?
I'm not complaining.
Any toilet paper there, Pete? Or
plenty of toilet paper.
Well, see, there you go. You're better off than most Australians.
I'm not for a minute complaining either. It's a first world problem. Look where I am. I'm healthy. I'm safe. I'm in Australia. Look at how many people have died around the world. I mean, let's just put things into perspective. Any complaints I've got here just don't matter. And in a week or two, I'll be home and having another 14 days self-isolation at home.
So you actually, so you say, how long are you in isolation for now? Is it 14 days or 20 days?
Well, I was in isolation for 16 days on the ship.
Yeah.
And now that we're here, I've got 14 days in Melbourne.
Okay, so then you have to go back to Cremorne. Where do you live in Sydney?
I go back to Collaroy in Sydney.
So that's another 14 days.
In theory, I'm told you have to, when I was looking at the website today, it appears I then have to I have to isolate at home for 14 days. The interesting thing about all of this, of course, is that they're assuming that you have not been positive. So all of these rules are for people who have not yet had COVID-19. Well, I've had COVID-19. What does that mean to me? And because in theory, until recently, they've been saying, well, once you've had it, you can't get it again. Now, there are a few reports saying, well, maybe you can get it again. Certainly, they're saying that by next year, if the virus mutates, then, you know, I'm likely to be able to get it again next year. But all my reading so far, and I've done a fair bit of it, is that at the moment I'm not going to be able to get it again. And so therefore, if I test positive, if I test negative now with the test I had yesterday, then in theory I should be let out of jail because I'm no longer a risk to the population. However, that is very unlikely to happen because there's also the public perception. And to explain what I've done to everybody, most people look around and see, oh, you're C+, and run the other way because they don't want to get it. And there's so much misinformation out there. I understand it. So I reckon we're here for the 2 weeks, and that's fine. If that's what we've got to do to help contain the issue, so be it.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting thing. Look, I don't feel like I've been cooped up at home, even though we're all shut down. I mean, galleries closed and all that sort of stuff. I still am doing what I have to do to you know, do my work. So I come into the gallery, the doors are closed, I don't see anyone, I do the prints I have to make, and I go out in the morning, I take photos on my own, and I never see anyone down here taking photos, so that's good. I speak to my friends on the phone, I go for a bike ride.
You're loving it, aren't you, Fletch?
Life is actually really good. The hardest thing about this is having two teenagers stuck at home with you. That's the worst thing. And they're the ones that are, they're not, you know, they're actually doing okay, but they're driving us insane, eating us out of house and home. So, you know what that's like, buddy. There's nothing to eat. Have some fruit. You know. Pete, can you get my favourite chips?
I'm bored.
Well, mate, just go Uber Eats because it's, you know, I mean, I was dead against Uber Eats, but boy, have I changed my tune.
But can I just ask you, mate, you've arrived back into the country and a lot of the restrictions and that sort of stuff that are in place now just didn't exist. Obviously you haven't been into the outside world, but are you surprised at some of the stories, like people being arrested in their cars for eating a pizza and that sort of stuff? Or, you know, have you got back to Australia and just thought, Jesus, what's going on?
I listen to all of these stories on the media, but I no longer believe any of them.
Yeah, right. So Donald Trump was right. It is all fake news.
Well, it is, and it's what you make of it. And watching Donald on the TV yesterday and today and how he is writing what happened when the virus first hit the United States, it's a fantastic exercise in what you should do if you want to, you know, the history is written by the winners. Donald Trump is a winner. Really interesting looking at him.
Yeah. Hey, look, COVID aside, you went to Antarctica, mate. Not everyone gets to go to Antarctica. It's a pretty amazing place. So, you know, tell us about your trip. What did you see down there?
This was the latest in the season that I've been. So the season is basically October to March, early April, much past April, and, you know, suddenly the weather can change and you find your ship is stuck in ice and you're there for the next 6 months. So we were actually the last ship down there, and that was quite interesting because a lot of the time when you go around to all the different spots in Antarctica, there's a schedule so that one ship will go in, the other ship will come out, and you try to do it so that you never see another ship. And it's, you know, you have that feeling that you're out in the middle of nowhere, and I mean, you are in the middle of nowhere. So, but I was wondering, well, late season, what is it going to be like? And I spoke to Kevin Raver briefly before I went, and he'd just been down, and he said that he wasn't all that impressed. He said, oh, Antarctica looked terrible and all that sort of stuff. And I was thinking, oh, geez, you know, is this global warming or what is it? But when I got down there, I just found it the most beautiful place I have ever seen. I don't know, if you're in the Alps, you know, in the mountains and it snows, and then it comes to spring and, you know, the snow's melting away and it's just leaving patches of snow here, and you see all the depths and the different layers of the snow, etc. And yeah, that's what it was like down there. There's still heaps of snow in places. Yeah. You know, the weather is more changeable. You'd get a proper sunrise, a proper sunset, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And from a landscape point of view, I seriously believe I've got the best Antarctic work I've ever taken. And you should check it out on Peter Eastway.
I am. I'm buying a print. I'm looking at it right now, Peter. I'm looking at it right now. But then I'm looking at the price of 60-inch print unframed for $3,500. Jeez, man, I wish I had that sort of money. Hey,
I'll give you 5% off, mate.
Thanks. Fantastic. I'll get my wife to put the order in. Actually, I am looking at this photo. You've got a Deception Island. It's got someone with those boats, you know, those two boats?
Oh, yep.
And that actually is more snow there than when I was there. It was all just black soil, you know, black sand.
Well, it was the first time I was there, this trip. And then this second trip we went, I'm standing there and I'd photographed, there's a bit of snow, and then this snow squall came through. And it was just fantastic. So we were ashore for a couple of hours, and for around about 10 minutes, it just snowed it snowed a lot. And so I was shooting all the way through that. And that's why it's almost a white image. It's all very high key with just the water boats sort of showing their form. And there are two or three versions there. And it's just lucky to be there at the right time.
Yeah, that's I like those. They're amazing. Oh, look, there's a beautiful mountain. There's one that you've got there, which is a bit further along in the portfolio, of a mountain coming out, and there's low cloud, and it's channel? Is that the
part of the Lemaire or the Gerlach? Yeah. Well, you might be thinking of the Lemaire Channel, but yeah. Gerlach Strait. That was in the Gerlach Strait. It's a square shot with a white islet, is it?
Foyne Harbour.
Foyne Harbour, yeah, that's where it is.
That's I should have read that before I asked you where it was, but that's beautiful. Actually, yeah, beautiful. Oh, look at that. Far out. That's Foyne Harbour again. Look at that cloud.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, look at that one.
Wow.
Shit, mate, you have got some good stuff. You bastard.
No, it was a pretty epic sort of trip. And it was interesting. Far like out. I had five photographers with me on board, and you know, they are obviously very disappointed that we didn't get to South Georgia. Yeah. On the other hand, they seem to be pretty keen to get back down again. And Aurora is providing a free voyage to the same value for whatever you had on this one, so you get an opportunity to go back down again. And so they're actually thinking they might do it at a different time of the year, because people ask, you know, what is the best time to go to Antarctica? And it's any time, any time. But it is different. And like a lot of people on the voyages this time, they thought they saw a lot of penguins, because we got to see, you know, a couple of penguin colonies where there might have been, you know, 1,000, 2,000 penguins. If you've never seen any penguins, you think, wow, that's a lot, isn't that great? Of course, if we go down in November, December sort of thing, you'll see 200, 300,000 bloody penguins at the one spot. Yeah. And so it's just a different sort of thing. But again, as I said, the landscapes and you know, we saw lots of whales that you don't necessarily see. Well, I haven't seen so much at other times of the year anyway. I mean, I only got, I've got 6 or 7 trips down there. So, I mean, I can't really talk as an expert because, you know, it's just so changeable.
Yeah. Well, Pete, I tell you, your photos, they are the best you've done in Antarctica, I reckon. I'm just looking at one now, Denko Island Ice Study. With their fog, looks like a low cloud fog. And then she's awesome stuff, mate. And there's the fog bow.
I'm looking at the one, I'm just clicking in the background here, having a look at the site too, but I'm looking at Astrolabe Island.
Oh, Astro, Astrolabe, that would have been on my, so you're looking at the Antarctica, not the Antarctica 2020.
Oh, okay, hang on, wrong folder.
So I've got two portfolios there. Christian's on the right one, he's on the 2020, but Cohen, you're not.
Oh, that'd be right. It was a nice photo anyway.
Yeah, Astrolabe.
Ah, here we go, yes, got it.
And Weddell Sea Study, the iceberg with all the penguins on it. You can tell they're penguins because of all the pink
That's right.
Stuff.
all the krill feces.
Yeah, it's disgusting. They stink. I tell you. It's you've done well, Pete. That's I think everyone should get over to your website now and have a look at your Antarctica 2020 catalogue, because that's pretty remarkable. Nice stuff. I'm jealous. Super jealous.
So while I was in isolation, I've turned it into a book. So like the Middlehurst book that I won a couple of awards for, nice big format because it's all shot on medium format. And so I've had plenty of time and I've designed up a book like that. So that'll be going off to Memento Pro shortly. I just want to wait until I get back to the studio so I can just check all of the photos on the ASO monitor just to make sure that they're 100%. I was using the Wacom Mobile Studio Pro, and it's really, really very good, but it's not quite as good as the ASOS. And so, so when I'm traveling, it's fantastic. And I've got the ASO set up here in the hotel with me. I've got the Wacom here in the hotel with me. couldn't work without it. I also ramped it up. I put in 64 gig of RAM, and I've got a 2 terabyte solid state drive, and it just flies. So it's fantastic.
Awesome, mate. I was going to ask you, what cameras were you using down in Antarctica? Were you shooting with the new XT on the phase and all that?
They couldn't get an XT to me. So I shot it all on the XF, but with the 150 megapixel back. And I was listening to one of your other podcasts where you were lamenting the ability to use higher ISOs, and that does with the phase cameras, but that was because you were on a Series 2 back, and Series 3 and 4, of course, are CMOS. And you know, you'll see in that portfolio that you're just looking at, there are quite a lot of shots photographed at 6400, 800 ISO on the phase. And there is noise in there. But when you enlarge up a 150 megapixel, you can see noise that if you only enlarge, instead of enlarging it up to 100%, you just go up to, say, 33 1/3%. So now what you're looking at is the equivalent of a 50 megapixel sensor. Yeah. And it looks fantastic. And I mean, it's essentially a very similar sensor to what's in the Sony and the Nikon DSLRs and mirrorless cameras. So, you know, the quality that you're getting out of the new phase sensors and the high ISO ability is just sensational. It's just a complete game changer.
Yeah, and
the new voice. I was also shooting with the X-T3 and the X-T4, they didn't have to lend me before I went as well. But that's a great little camera as well. And it's a good balancing act because, you know, big medium format and a nice small Fuji next to it. Mind you, the 200 millimeter f/2 isn't a small lens, but there you go.
Nice. Well, mate, you've done very well. You've done very well, Pete. You should take up this photography thing as a career.
I'll take that. I've got plenty to do to plan my career for the next 10 and a half days, so I'll think about it.
Mate, what are you going to do from here? What's the game plan?
Well, it's interesting. I'm just finishing off, while we're away, I finished off Better Photography magazine, our 100th issue. And
congratulations.
It's more or less ready to go, but I've held back on printing it just at the moment, because if I print it and put it into the newsstand, can people go to the news agency to buy it? That's what I'm not too sure. Yeah. So fortunately, we've got a lot of online subscribers these days. And we've got a certain number of paper subscribers as well. So what I'm thinking of doing is that we'll still publish on time as normal, and we'll work out a smaller print run, and then just see what happens, and maybe we release it again a little bit later. In the meantime, if everybody wants to hop on to betterphotography.com and subscribe, that'd be great, because I've still got I've got one teenage daughter and the other's in her early 20s, but they're eating me out of house and home too, so I know what you mean.
And they've got horses and I believe horses eat a lot. So obviously you've got other work as well to go on with. You're an accountant part-time as well.
Look, I'm also looking at revisiting a lot of my online courses. So for instance, I've got the Landscape Photography Masterclass. So I've had in mind, I wanted to revamp that for quite a while. So that's what I'll be doing over the next, you know, two or three months, depending on how busy I am, but just gradually updating that with new material, etc. Actually, as we're sitting here, I'm just going to redo some of the basics on shooting because, you know, understanding depth of field and things like that. It's amazing how many people that come away on workshops, they have a rough understanding, but they don't really get how it all ties together. And I've done a lot of workshops on that. So I'm going to put those workshops online as part of the Landscape Photography Masterclass. So that's the plan going forwards.
Yeah, good, mate. Well, that's, you know, you've got plenty to do. You've got plenty of time now up your sleeve. So I'm not sure what it's like over in Sydney, and especially in Coleroy, but you'll probably find when you get there, there's not much is open, I guess, just the
Well, it's interesting. I'm told that if you surf, you're allowed to go out. And they've closed the southern and eastern beaches in Sydney because it's so busy. And now all of those surfers have just driven over the bridge up to the northern beaches.
So
I'm told it is really, really busy. And my daughter and boyfriend are unhappy about that because they get crowded out in the surf. But you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that, there was a whole lot of talk about the surfers down here in Southwest, you know, like going out and the breaks being all really crowded. And of course, they shut down all the regions here in WA. So it's not only is the state shut down, but within the state it's shut down. So people from Perth can't drive down to the Southwest unless they have a really good excuse or they have some reason for work. But there's been a bunch of prominent, well-known people, I think some footballers, coming down, getting through the roadblocks and going out for a surf and then going to the coffee shop. The coffee shop next to us, the girl said, "Oh, some guy, such and such was in the other day." And I said, "Who's that?" She goes, "Oh, you know, the football player." I went,
Nat Fife, I think his name was Nat Fife.
What's he doing down here, you know? And I think all our breaks are, well, we thought that would be good because you wouldn't have so many people out, but I think because no one's working, there's a lot of people not working. They're all going for surfs and stuff. But
yeah.
Can I just say just quickly, because we mentioned Nat Fife, and, you know, we don't want to get, you know, any spankage from this, but he actually had good reason to be in the Southwest. He's apparently his family owned a farm down there, so he was helping out on the family farm and just had some time off and went to go surfing. So we're not anti-Nat Fife.
No, that's right. I don't know who he is. But so he's milking cows and
shearing sheep. Well, he's the captain of the Dockers.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
You at the Dockers again?
Well, that's the other question. Actually, that's a really interesting one. Is, you know, sport going to be the same as it was, you know, ever?
It will be for me because I don't watch it anyway.
Who cares anyway? It's, you know, it's garbage.
I'm not very sporty.
I thought this was a photography channel.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Well, tell us, give us a bloody good landscape tip, Pete.
Landscape tip.
Your stuff in Antarctica is unbelievable. Now, were you bracketing? Were you focus stacking? Were you doing anything special to make those photos beautiful?
I'll tell you one of the interesting challenges when you're shooting with 150 megapixels, and that is that if your focus isn't right, you know it. And so to get the focus exactly right was a real challenge. Now, with the camera, you can trim the focus for every lens. And I had all of the lenses trimmed so that they worked in normal conditions, temperatures. But then I'm there shooting and I'm looking on the back of my camera and they're not sharp because the cold air has changed the physical size of the lens. And so suddenly I have to re-trim all of the lenses. And I probably trimmed the lenses three or four times while I was down there just to get them working. The other thing I discovered that in low light and shooting again with medium format, the Fuji was fine. Low light, bang, get focus. But for the phase, it would hunt a lot on infinity. So I used the hyperfocal focusing setting where you can set it at infinity focus. And when you're standing on the side of the ship and photographing the mountains in the distance, they're at infinity. So I would just basically set the lens at infinity and suddenly all of my shots were just amazingly sharp. So understanding your camera and how to use the technology to get the most out of it. I mean, let's face it, I was shooting in low light where
on
I
rocking
would put
ship.
The medium format camera away, you know, two or three years ago. I wouldn't have been able to use it at all. Here we are using, you know, getting 150 megapixel shots in low light conditions, and it was just fantastic. It really was.
Yeah, that's one thing I do enjoy about my new Leica is I just I put the live view on and I look at the screen and I go, oh, look, I wouldn't mind focusing on that mountain over there. Mm. And I just touch the screen and, oh, look, oh, it's focused.
Yeah. And the Leica lenses are to die for. You know, they are beautiful, beautiful pieces of glass. So you'll get some great shots with those, with that camera, yeah, no doubt.
I
sold my Leica outfit because the wife needed a better kitchen. So I sold all of my lenses and now it's there with a wonderful oven and a refrigerator that feeds me regularly.
Yeah. All right. So your wife does all the cooking?
That's probably a preferred outcome, yes.
What's the reality? I don't know if Uber Eats most of the time.
Well, the reality is I'm not a great cook, and Kathy enjoys cooking, so I'm very, very comfortable with that arrangement.
Yeah. Do you do the dishes or clean up, or is that the kids' responsibility?
The kids' responsibility. Yeah, I wish.
Well, see, we've got ours trained. Ours will clean up after dinner, and you know, they bitch and moan and they'll do it in their own time. But the only downside of that is they love to listen to their gangster rap at full tilt when they're cleaning up. So we have to leave the area to
what makes them go through that phase? You know, they live in Dunsborough. You know, they live this idyllic life. You know, they're educated, they're well fed. You know, they haven't been to jail four or five times each. Why do they like gangster rap?
I don't know.
It is crap.
I try to get them to listen to my music, you know, my beautiful screamo metalcore, but they're not into that either. Yeah. So I think it's genetics. You know, when you're brought up in a low socioeconomic environment like I was, I think that's passed down through your genes.
So, Carwin, Carwin, would you like to give me a landscape photography tip?
Well, you know, when you're shooting with a Panasonic S1R at 187 megapixels, Pete. Mate, where do you focus? How do you, you know, without getting your tape measure out and all that sort of stuff, just for us amateur hacks, how do you hyperfocal focus? You just focus somewhere in the bottom third, or, mate, how does that? I've done it a couple of times and I don't know how I've done it, to be honest.
Well, the hyperfocal focusing point is relying on depth of field extending behind and in front of whatever you focus on. Mm. So if you focus on infinity, you can't actually focus any further. So therefore, depth of field extends in front of infinity, but there's no need for it to extend beyond infinity because that's beyond infinity. You can't focus any further. Mm. So what you do is you find a point that is closer than that distant mountain range and focus on that, relying on depth of field to extend out to infinity, and then and thus it extends further forward as well. Mm. And that point where you focus and depth of field extends out to infinity is called the hyperfocal focusing point.
But where is that? So, like, without going through, you know, doing the calculations and all that sort of stuff, is that roughly the bottom third?
It's not the bottom third. It depends where it's the distance from the camera to whatever it is you're focusing on. But if you're out in the landscape and there's a tree halfway between you and the mountain range, focus on the tree, and the chances are that the hyperfocal focusing point will help. But there are all sorts of things that you need to consider in addition to that, is what lens you're using, how close is the subject that you're focusing on, what format is your sensor, because that changes, what aperture are you using. So all of these things go into it, and you can get little apps which basically will help you work out what that hyperfocal focusing point is. But and some cameras will work it out for you automatically as well. But yeah, basically I'm like you. I just I focus two-thirds of the way into the scene and leave it at that. With medium format, though, there is no such thing as depth of field. You can see that it's not sharp. And I find that focus stacking is often the only solution. Either that or with the new XT and use Schleimflug's principle, tilt the lens down, and then that works an absolute treat.
Hey, Pete, knowing what you know now, would you do this again?
Would I go back down to Antarctica knowing that I had to spend 30 days in isolation when I got back?
Well, obviously not, but would you, you know, has this experience been worth it? You know, have you gone, disaster, or, you know, this is one of those moments in my life that stays with me forever?
I don't have any regrets. I mean, you can't have regrets about this sort of stuff. My regrets are for all of the people who have died from it. I mean, let's not, you know, trivialize what's happening out there. It's bloody horrible. And my heart goes out to all of those people who've lost family and loved ones. I mean, that's what you've got to be looking at. personally, if I you know, people said you're going to get 10 days in Antarctica and then you're going to be 30 days isolation, I'd say, no, I'll bugger that. I'll go down to Antarctica in another year or two or something like that. But having gone through that, having made the decision for the second voyage that, yes, we'll do it, there's a risk at the other end, do I regret it? No. It's been a great experience. I've had time to do stuff. And as I say, although I'm isolated, I've got so many projects in my mind. I've actually enjoyed being forced not to do other things and being able to focus on these projects I've had. I mean, I've got the three books on Bhutan, which I've wanted to do for bloody years, and I've finished them now. They're all designed and ready to go to the printer. So I've been productive in my use of time rather than sitting down like Christian and watching the Quantum of Solace James Bond film for the 27th time.
Don't even know if I've watched it for the first time. Yeah, no, it is. It's been a reset, I think, for everybody, because you do have different priorities, and you wake up in the morning and go, okay, well, actually, I don't have to go. It's not business as usual for me. I don't have to go in and open the gallery or go see the girls and find out what's happening. You know, and I've been learning new skills. I've been working on our website, because we've got a new website now, of course, you know, christianfletcher.com.au. Go check it out. It's a beautiful, beautiful website.
christianfletcher.com.au.
Some people say it's the best website they've ever seen, but I digress.
Where was that, the Blind Society?
Yeah. Hang on, Fletcher. I'm just going to get it up now, mate.
Oh, he's getting it up. See, that's what happens when you go to my site.
You know what I mean.
But I've been updating stuff. I've been learning the point of sale system at the gallery. Doing all these jobs that I wouldn't normally do because I've got time and the inclination. It's quite refreshing. Photo wise, I've been learning a new camera system, and that's been fun. I've been getting up in the mornings and going looking for photos. I haven't got any good ones. I've been mucking around with some studio lighting and, you know, all this stuff that, you know, I've done, you know, podcasts and we talked to Art Wolf last week. We told him about you, actually, Pete.
Yeah.
And yeah. He was
Art's featuring in the 100th issue of Better Photography. So we've been speaking recently as well. Yeah.
Yeah. He was so shocked to hear that, you know. And he said, you asked the question, you know, is Peter going to die? And we said, yeah, we think he is. Yeah, we think he is.
No, you said that. Christian.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he's already moved on to the other side.
Other side.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I mean, I remember my dear old mum, she had a little card on a dresser to put up with us kids as we were growing up. And it was... change the things you can and accept the things you can't. And I think, and let God give me the wisdom to know the difference. But I think in the days that we're at the moment, there are certain things that we've got no control over. So we just got to make the most of what we got. And what you're saying is, you know, exactly where I'm at. You know, there are things to be done. And, you know, hopefully there'll be some business for us at the other end.
I think so.
I just want to publicly make a prediction, and if I'm very wrong, I'll happily eat my hat on this, and if I get it right, you know, I'm an absolute legend. But I reckon we're probably a couple of months away from being out of this, out of the woods, so to speak. And I was having a chat with Fletch off the air before about, obviously we're in Western Australia and things are slightly different over here because we're an island within an island. We have virtually no cases. We had, you know, four cases... reported overnight, and you know, three of those are from cruise ships. So we're actually we're probably a couple of weeks away over here from some semblance of normality to come back. But just that's us. We're a microcosm, but I think Australia on the whole is actually doing extremely well. So I think life is going to be, you know, it's going to come back to normal within probably 8 weeks, relatively normal.
Thank you, Dr. Carwin.
I think it'll come back quicker than they're saying at the moment as well. But I think the government's just prepping us and saying, you know, I mean, I think in Australia it'll come back. How soon other countries come back that makes us comfortable to go overseas and resume travel, that's another matter.
That's a year away.
It could be the beginning of you know, a whole new internal resurrection of, you know, buy Australian, do Australian, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, who knows?
Well, I'm happy for it to keep going for quite a while because I'm actually enjoying this lifestyle.
Yeah, and we got $750 a week from the government for 6 months if we've gone for the JobKeeper payment, so we should be right.
Yeah. Well, we haven't gone for that yet, but I think we're going to. But it makes you realise how much less you can actually live with, and you know we're doing things now. We're being more, you know, thrifty, I guess. And we're still shopping local and doing all that. And it actually makes me think we'll probably shop more local when we get through this because, you know, you got to look after the people in your own community. I'm a great believer that in Australia, if we all shopped within Australia, if we all travelled within Australia, there's enough people to support everybody. Mm. A lot of our money goes off, especially in WA, a lot of our money goes off to Bali. Mm. And people are always travelling over there, and I know it's cheaper, and it's, you know, it's a nice warm holiday to have. But really, we've got some great places over here. If we can somehow work it so more people go to local venues, maybe we can then look at the pricing because if more people are using these things, and then let's just stay in our own little spot and see your own country.
Pete, you're an accountant, and I agree with what Fletcher is saying, but from an accountant's point of view, can Australia sustain this island mentality? Can we manufacture locally and be competitive? And like, basically, can we just rebuild without outside influences, do you think?
You need to ask a economist that, not an accountant. And I did do economics at uni, and let's put it this way: instead of doing economics 3 in third year, I did German 1.
Ja, genau.
Germany 1.
That's interesting.
Funny, but yeah. Well, look, yeah, that's true. I mean, you if you're going to get a new TV, you're not going to get it from Australia, pretty much.
The other argument is the global economy and the global community. And, you know, with communications these days, I don't think we're going to go back to a parochial lifestyle anytime soon. Mm. But yeah, because you'll still be able to ship stuff from one place to the other. So Chinese imports will still come in. Japanese imports will still come in. Our iron ore will still go over, et cetera. Mm. But I think you're right. I think that there will be people rethinking what we should be doing locally.
Then again,
the global financial crisis of 2008, 2009, and how the banking was going to be changed and finance was going to be changed and this was going to be changed, we're back to where we were.
as far
as I can see it, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how long this will last. I think as a society, we will continue to evolve, and whether it's progress or not, that's just a subjective take on the fact that we're moving in a direction.
Mm. I must say, you were right up when you talked about how everyone was so friendly when you came in, came into the country and through border security and all that sort of stuff. I've noticed just down here, when you go out for a walk, if you do pass someone else, you smile and wave.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much more friendly.
Absolutely.
Everyone seems more friendly when they're out because we have this common bond, I guess, this common thing that we're going through.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so people come together. And the other thing I really like is that you see families out together riding on their push bikes and going and walking and all that stuff. Normally, it'd be the kids on their own or the parents would be doing something else. But now everyone's forced to be with their family and they're doing things that, you don't do so much. So
if it's so good, why didn't we do it before, Christian?
Because we're all so busy. I think we've got the wrong priorities. We work so hard generally. Most people do just to get enough money to.
Dear listener, we have a communication problem.
Oh, fuck out of your rug, guys! Are you there? Hello. Hello. Two dyslexics walk into a bra. I'm here a week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waitress. Just let me know when you guys.
Is everything working, Carwin? Is there something wrong there? Is that okay?
No, the internet dropped out. So we just we lost you. Where you said we've got it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we lost you. People work really hard for a living.
Yeah,
and some people don't. But you know, we've lost sight of that. You know, the people that that work hard for a living, Peter, Tony, Carwin, you know, they've got it all wrong. They should be doing more of what I do, which is sit around and do Sweet Fanny Adams.
Mm.
You know, just make money hand over fist for doing nothing. That's my life. Yeah. And every, you know, I just sit there. I mean, my the hardest thing I do all day is open up the bank balance and try and count all the numbers going in. That's so freaking hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, no, I'm not a successful photographer like some I know.
Hey, all those. How are you, legends? Mate, all those people in ISO at the moment. What can they do? Can you just suggest one photographic project for those people that, you know, are just bloody stuck?
Yeah, design up a photo book. I'm just such a big believer in the printed page, and not everybody has access to a printer itself, but everybody's got access to you know, going out and designing up a book. It's just a project. And that means you can go and photograph something new. You can photograph your house, what it's like, and then in 20 years' time, it might look interesting. Or you can go and you can put together your best photos of the last 12 months or the last 10 years, or you can put together your photos from Antarctica or wherever you've been. There are all sorts of photo books that you can do, and it's a project that when this is all over, you know, you send it off to someone like Memento Pro or whoever you want that does your books, and you end up with something of value at the end of the day. I mean, when we all cark it, I can't see my kids opening up my hard drives to look at my photos, but I can see them opening up my photo books and having a flip them through and saying, "Dad was a really good photographer, much better than Christian Fletcher."
Actually, that's a
but
good idea.
But he's a lousy dad.
This is actually this photo here is what I'm going to put in my photo book. Guys, can you see that?
I love it. And if I like that.
if you want to know what we're talking about, just get over to our Instagram, which is Light Minded Podcast, and have a look at that.
Yeah, good on you, Pete. I mean, you're a legend, mate. You'll always be respected in the industry. You're a brilliant photographer. You're a funny guy. You do care, even though you come across as a harsh bastard.
He's alive, you know.
He's alive. Yep. And we're happy about that because, you know, you can't have more than 10 people at a funeral, and we couldn't find that many people to go to one of your funerals.
Oh, I knew there was a catch somewhere, so I'm so glad it came.
Yeah. But yeah, no. It's, as always, mate, it's always a pleasure chatting. I know we've sort of swayed off the photography path a little bit, but yeah. it's and we did get picked up on this by a listener a little while back that not enough photography content in a particular podcast.
Yeah.
I think it might have been your last one, Pete. Actually, might have
been. Yeah. Well, what did she say? It was crap or something or other.
Yeah, irrelevant, useless, not good at all.
Well, that is the good thing, though, isn't it? That when you do produce something, if you're listening to it and you don't like it, you can just turn it off. So that's a choice we've all got. Whereas Christian, I love listening to the diatribe that comes out of your mouth at a logarithmic rate. It's just amazing. I just want to say, it just makes me smile. And you know, let's face it, we're in isolation. What else are you going to be doing?
You've got no choice.
Dior and Anadis, it's not a bad thing to do.
Mate, imagine working with him. Imagine what that's like.
Well, hang on. I'm just imagining isolation now, and I'm just wondering what Tony Hewitt's doing right now at this very point in time.
Yeah, what are you doing, Tony? What are you doing? I know he listens.
Yeah. poor Tony. Anyway, that's another discussion, of course, about Tony. And actually, when are you... Yeah, so you guys can't go to New Zealand together at the moment, can you? So you got that plan for next year? You're ramping up all your tours?
Well, we're not too sure whether we can. We can't go to New Zealand, we don't think, this July. Mm. That's not looking likely. But we may do a similar sort of thing, similar sort of program somewhere in Australia is one option. But we're also thinking that maybe New Zealand and Australia will be open for business and cross-border sooner than maybe we can get back to the States, for instance.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but, yeah, who knows? At the moment, there's just so much unknown out there. I figure it's going to be at least another month before we sort of get a better feeling for what's going to happen.
Mm. Yeah, Zane, can people find all those workshops that you're doing on your website or through Better Photography?
Well, at the moment, I probably need to go and take them all off my website because we're not going to be.
Yeah, because I've just signed up. I've just put a deposit down on Iran.
Oh, I'm sorry, mate. We're full. We didn't want you.
Actually, people can subscribe to your newsletter, is that right?
They go to the website and they can sign up for 53 tips, and they also get my newsletter at the same time, so I'd love them to do it. That's at betterphotography.com.
And
Christian, in all seriousness, no, I won't say that because this is going public, so that's okay. That's fine. Moving on.
Now say it. You have to. But you can't hook it and not pay it off. You've got to say it, mate.
I was
going
to say that there are some countries in the world where your lack of self, censorship may cause you some problems.
You think? That's why I'm not going out of Dunsmore, mate. It's the big bad world. It's not safe for me and my loose lips.
So some of us understand you, and I guess the others don't listen to the podcast, do they?
yeah, that's right. Yeah, just as well. But good, mate. Well, it's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your stay. How many days you got left in the hotel?
I'm trying not to count, but I get out on at midnight on Sunday the 26th.
Okay, yeah, right.
I don't know exactly if they kick me out at midnight because that would be a bit awkward, but hopefully I can just leave the following morning.
Yeah. And you're going to drive back to Sydney?
I'm planning to drive back, yeah.
You're going to hire a car?
That's one of the options at the moment, yeah.
Have you told the hire company that you're tested positive for COVID-19?
Well, you see, by the time we hire it, I'll be negative again, you see, because the time will have gone past, so I'll have a negative test. So, yeah.
You don't think you're going to have a recurrence anytime soon? You know, you might have just got the little taste of it. Now it's going to come back and bite you in the bum?
Well, if I do, I'll be sure to visit you, Christian.
Mate, it's great to hear that you're healthy, Pete, because we're genuinely worried, mate, so that's, it's fantastic news.
Misrepresenting how serious it is for some people, for most people it's not necessarily. Yeah, what our experience and the experience of all the people on the ship is that it's not a big deal. It doesn't mean that we stop self-isolating and all that sort of stuff. We do, but I guess what I'm trying to say is don't fear it if you get it. Because statistically, you'll be okay. It's only a small percentage that have a real problem. Statistically, you shouldn't worry if you get it. But having said that, we need to stop it. I get it.
All right, guys, we're going to have to wrap it up. I've got to go and paint my push bike. So,
paint your push bike. Is that what you call it these days?
I'm just wondering what I'm going to do here in my hotel room. I've got so many things to do. Okay.
I'm just going to get up now. I'm going to walk out of this place and I'm going to walk down the street. I'm going to go look at some stuff at the beach, maybe take my camera out. I've got a Leica, of course, SL2. Of course, you know that now, Pete. I'll turn on live view and I'll put my little finger on where I want it to focus and I'll push the button and maybe set the ISO to 1600 and see virtually no noise at all and then remove that noise, what's there anyway. Then maybe swap over to one of the beautiful three Leica lenses that I've got and, make some prints. But enjoy your hotel stay there, Pete. A lot of people would love to stay in a fancy hotel like yours.
And here endeth the advertisement. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, we've all got to get our little bits in. We don't make any money out of this, This is like, no one pays us to do this.
No,
that's
true. It's
for
love. We do it for love.
So does that mean I'm not getting paid for this again?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Oh, mate, look, the way you were, buddy, milking it, you were telling everyone about your workshops.
You should be paying us.
Subscribe to the, yeah, that's right.
Okay. How much?
I don't know. What do you think we're worth?
15 grand.
All right, let's not can we just sign off before I tell you that?
Yeah. All right, guys, let's wrap it up. Pete, thanks for joining us, mate. Great to see you're alive
and
healthy.
Thanks, guys. Always good. And thanks for keeping me company in my long-term isolation.